Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, and we have a really, really good show for you today. So let's just get straight into it, shall we? My guest today is an author, entrepreneur, and a continuous debunker of financial myths. He is the founder and chief wealth architect at The Wealth Factory, which empowers its members to build sustainable wealth through financial efficiency and organization that leads to clarity, peace of mind, and financial confidence. In this conversation, we talk about killing sacred cows, adding value and getting paid for it, and getting really, really good at hiring. Now, let's hack Garrett Gunderson. Before we get going with today's interview, I have a question for you. Have you ever considered starting your own business or launching a startup? If the answer is yes, which I'm assuming it is, then you're probably going to want a great logo, as well as business cards and a website and a whole bunch of graphic design needs you will have. Well, this is where designcrowd.com can help. And thankfully, they're today's sponsor. Here's how Design Crowd works. First thing is you just have to visit designcrowd.com/hack and you post a brief describing the design you need. Just let's say a brand new logo. Then Design Crowd will open your project to their 550,000 designers to respond. Step three, within hours, you will begin receiving designs. And over the course of 3 to 10 days, a typical project will receive 60 to over 100 different designs from designers around the world. Last step, you just have to pick the best design, and the designers get paid. Plus, you're covered. If you don't find a design you want from the 60 to 100 you've been given, no problem. Design Crowd has an absolute money-back guarantee. Crowdsourcing design on Design Crowd helps you get access to the collective creativity of hundreds of thousands of designers, and it will save you money, time, and it'll help you find the best design possible for your budget. Plus, they want to give you $100 off your very first project for being a Hack the Entrepreneur listener. Check out designcrowd.com/hack right now, and that $100 off your first project is waiting for you. Once again, that's designcrowd.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very, very special guest for you. Garrett, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be with you, John.
It's absolutely my pleasure. We've been working on this for a few months, so I'm glad we get to sit down. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
What do you say? Should we jump into it?
Let's do it, man.
Let's do it. All right. Garrett, you're a man who wears several different hats. Today we're talking to Garrett, the entrepreneur. So okay. As an entrepreneur, Garrett, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I think that one of the most important things that I've done is rather than delegating tasks, which are kind of like a boomerang, you delegate something and the people come back to you. So it's always a bottleneck and it always is on your shoulders. I've delegated roles. So people have a very specific thing that they own where the buck stops with them, where they can kind of be empowered and run with it. And so I really believe like that's been critical. And when you have that combined with a very compelling vision, because we want to free 1 million entrepreneurs to achieve economic independence. And that's very like exciting for the people that work with us. And so they feel like the work that they're doing connects to something, not just my bottom line, but also their bottom line, because they're paid by a sense of production, not just time and effort. So I've made a collection of intrapreneurs within the organization, which has then freed up my time to do more speaking, more writing, more high-level relationship building, and more visioneering for the firm. And instead of being kind of below the line and constantly caught up in the how and the when and the operations, which absolutely can drain my energy. So I'm just constantly looking at my calendar and saying, what things that I do that I could stop doing or delegate, whether I have the person on my team or whether I could hire them. And is this a calendar that represents the habits, the rhythms, and the type of person I want to be in business? And that's absolutely been a venue or kind of a methodology that's allowed me to be kind of the artist that I want to be within my business. So I'm doing things now at such a rapid rate that years ago, when I was involved with solving all the problems and when I started my business, I was like the head janitor, the head bottle washer, customer service, everything, that now I've really just got people that I love working with and that I really enjoy being around and that I don't come home and worry about or complain about, because I've just been, especially in the last few years, a lot more powerful within the creation and conversation with people of what I tolerate and what I don't tolerate and who gets to be part of this vision. If they're not absolutely contributing to it and easing my mind, then they're just gone. Or we just have that very direct conversation and they opt out. So that's extraordinarily difficult to have those conversations, but been so productive so that once again, I can just do the four or five things that I do best.
So I've had almost 400 people on the show and I've never heard it like this, like delegating roles, not tasks. It's really, really interesting. I like this. So would you say though, Garrett, like sort of as an extension of that, like you have this role sort of like evolving or sort of being created or something that needs to be done, which could start with some tasks, but then evolves into a role. Would you think that you would hire somebody, even if a role is sort of 25% ready or 50% ready, and then as long as you hire a smart person, they can round out that role?
Oh yeah, I hired a chief of staff 3 days before I took a 2-month sabbatical to Italy with my family. And so it was definitely underdeveloped in the role. Like I still haven't fully, like I'm building this thing that I'm calling the relationship model, because I felt like I was going to a lot of things, meeting a lot of people, but not maximizing the opportunities because there was so much out there. I wanted someone that could really be a relationship manager for me so that all the opportunity that was out there, we could capitalize on it. And then I could actually even travel less or go to fewer things because we were extracting and building the most value with the least number of people rather than, you know, having so much that there was nothing that could happen from it. So what I do is I have a thing called the Stewardship Shaper. And the Stewardship Shaper is a document I created that says, okay, here's 5 objectives. And I help them kind of articulate the 5 objectives. Those are the roles. But then there's operations that fulfill those objectives. And they're primarily responsible for filling in what those operations are. All I want to know is, will those operations lead to conditions of satisfaction when the rubber meets the road? Like, will it look how I want it to look? I don't necessarily care how we get there. Meaning if their conation is different than mine and they like to go about it from a different angle or a different kind of process, that's fine as long as where we arrive is where I want it to be. And that frees me from any micromanagement. And it also builds a level of trust with people. But here's the deal. We hear it. It's almost cliched. Like for people to get from one level of their business to the next level, it just takes entirely different skills. And when I hit 7 figures for the first time in revenue, that was through a lot of hard work and relentlessness. But then to get to the next level where we hit the Inc. 500, that was about getting really, really good at hiring. And, you know, and when we would hire, where I think we're a little bit different because we have a really specific process for hiring that we've gotten built over a number of, you know, decades really. And even we've hired for some of our clients, executives. But one of the things that we did was when we brought them in, we actually had conversations about the zero tolerance policy around gossip. And we talked to them about there's an opportunity for committed complaints, meaning you can complain to a superior or a leader in the firm to vent or to get your idea out. But then after the complaint, you have to go address the situation. If you don't, then it's actually borderline gossip, because gossip's where you're trying to get someone else to see your viewpoint to negatively label someone else in the firm, which destroys the entire culture. So, and we fired people for gossip, like the moment, not even a second chance. And so what's happened is we've just created a really good place to work that people really enjoy. They joke around with each other a lot. They really love being there, which means that I don't always have to be there. And that when I do show up, I'm not showing up and hearing about problems. People have their roles and they come to me if they need support in that role by scheduling meetings. And I do that on a specific day where we schedule on Mondays. So there's not emergencies arising that are false emergencies that could hijack my day when I might be doing filming or speaking on a stage or being in the middle of writing a book. So it really creates a much better flow and the type of organization that I want to work within. So yes, That's a long answer to your question. Yeah, it could be 25% or 50% developed, because then people support that which they help to build. So if it's 25 or 50% developed in your own head, when you bring them on, they can see the missing pieces. They can see additional things, and then they feel like so valuable when they identify those and plug the holes or build the system or come and brainstorm or bring things to my attention. So absolutely.
So your example at the beginning was of that answer was an office manager or operations?
The person that I just hired was a chief of staff, which was really project and relationship management. So like anytime I'm on a call that could have follow-up, they're there, they're taking notes, they're working the follow-up. Anytime there's a project that requires multiple people, they're getting to know all the people that are involved and making sure that that project is on point. And they have their five objectives, which I bonus them. When they hit all five objectives for the quarter, they get a bonus. They get a bonus for every objective hit and a bigger bonus if they hit all five. And they also get a bonus for every objective I hit when I hit all my five, because they're the critical piece to supporting that. So they're more on a production economy compensation than just a salary.
So chief of staff, and then you said you have a very specific hiring process you've created over the decade. What, from the time that you realized you needed a chief of staff, how long until you'd found the right person and hired them?
So it took me about 3 months. And the process was I went to all my key influential relationships and I said, who do you know that's amazing at just, building and maintaining relationships? Who do you know that's amazing at just getting things done, like absolutely rock star level, getting things implemented? And then if they ask, they're like, why? Because originally I'd just say, I'd love an introduction. Because sometimes when you say you're looking to hire, people immediately go, well, these people already have a job. Guess what? All your badass A players already have a job.
Exactly.
You have to recruit I look at recruitment of a client as a lower priority than recruitment of a team member, because a team member is going to impact hundreds of clients, maybe thousands, where one client doesn't make or break us. And I feel like most businesses make the mistake of putting all their marketing efforts, of their thought processes, all of their money towards acquiring clients rather than acquiring team members that will make for the best customer service and experience of the people that work with you, that would create more longevity and more referability. So I think that business has it backwards far too often. And I think it was either Keith Cunningham or the book, The Ultimate Question 2.0, that posed, what if you never could acquire another customer again? How could you be in business? It would be by keeping your existing customers and delivering more value to them. So I'm constantly asking that question, not just how can I reach more people, but how can I more deeply impact the people I'm currently working with? And I think a big part of that is just having an amazing team that they're going to have an incredible experience with.
Yeah. Having that amazing team and sort of culture so that people, obviously amazing people, want to work for you when they find out about you, but also that when you go to your network, like you start with, to find referrals, those people want to give you the best.
Yeah. And I had one person in my network refer, I don't know, I think it was 11 or 12 people for the position. I filmed the video about what a chief of staff was. He sent that video out. We had a bunch of applications. And the other thing I do in my hiring process is make them jump through more hoops and more compliance, because I feel like most hiring processes are like community college, begging for someone to come in. I want to be more like an Ivy League school where it's like, hey, I want to see you prove this out before I ever pay you anything. I want you to read my book and give me a report on it. I want you to give me a cover letter that goes along with your resume. I want to talk to you on the phone before you ever come in and get to feed off our culture. And I'm going to do a lot of research and I'm going to get my team to sign off and I'm going to meet their spouse a lot of times. I mean, there's going to be a lot more to it than just, are they a good interviewer? Because I have this kind of luxury of being an amazing interviewer, as not an interviewer, but an interviewee, like when I would go look for a job out of college, even if I wasn't qualified for the jobs, I always got the offers because I just knew how to interview. And I don't want to hire someone that's like absolutely not the right person just because they're good at interviewing, right? And I think there are a lot of people that can do that, but I have a few kind of tactics to kind of sniff that out and find out if they're BSing or if they're just what they're saying and that kind of stuff. So we have a lot of questions that we ask. They meet a lot of people and get interviewed by multiple people, not just by me, because I'm kind of the person that really thinks that I take people at their word And I think everybody has the good intentions, and I think everybody's going to do what they say. And I like that I have a chairman that's a little bit more in reality and can kind of sniff those things out. And my wife has amazing intuition and can kind of sense if something's off. So I like using a little bit of a team approach, because it's a pretty delicate thing, this culture and this organization that we have. And if I let someone in that doesn't fit, they're going to actually push away some of the A players, or they're going to bring down the enjoyment of everything that we do. And it's funny, because I had early in 2017, I was doing an event, and one of our clients comes up and he goes, "Hey, I hired a VP of marketing," and conversation was about 10 minutes, but I could tell it wasn't someone that was going to fit. So I said, "Hey, do you think about him when you're at home?" He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Do you complain to your wife about him?" He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Okay, you just need to fire him." Because I'm like, don't try to shine shit. So, sorry for the language, but like, I was like, that's what you're doing here. And then I'm up on stage and someone's asking a question, and I realize one of my video guys that's supposed to be at the event filming isn't there. And I'm like, damn, I have to follow my own cooking here. So when he showed up late, I had already thought about him two or three times that week. So I said, "Hey, Andrew, it's done with us, man. I just want to let you know that this isn't working for me. I've given you a few chances. It's over. And I can't rely on you. And I'm now thinking about you, which is impacting my work. I want you to be an improvement, not a detriment." So I had to kind of follow my own cooking. And I got to tell you, so hard for us business owners to confront sometimes, to fire sometimes. It's just not a skill that a lot of entrepreneurs have. And we tolerate a lot of things for far too long.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it. And then becoming aware, though, of any of those sort of weaker points of ourselves is almost as essential as like being aware of our strengths. So knowing that, like, you, when you're hiring, you take people at their word, but you can bring your wife in, you can bring in, you know what I mean? Like, those kind of things are what I think pushes us forward. But throughout this conversation weaved in, Garrett, you've mentioned like being on stage, being at events and writing, and then also sort of recruitment. What is it that makes up sort of like the bulk of what you do for Wealth Factory?
So like today, most of what I'll be doing is filming one of our video programs that we filmed in 2014. So I'm refilming the whole thing. So I rewrote all of the outlines and I'll be filming that product. I'll be tomorrow speaking to a lot of our kind of relationships that I would call promotion partners or influencers, or just potential people that I get directly referred to by some of our high level relationships that I'm introducing into the firm and setting them off to the team. And then I'll do a one-day immersion with a client that I work with 5 people one-on-one a year. And those are people that are kind of game-changing thought leaders, because my firm is better than I am at helping people get their financial house in order and recovering cash and boosting their bottom line and helping them scale their business. But I like to work with some people that are saying, "Hey, I'm in the next chapter of my life. I want to impact millions instead of just hundreds." And so I do a full day immersion with them, and it's really kind of a vision process that really brings out my skill set, and I'm really excited about. Then I kind of determine, like, out of my Rolodex, who they need to be connected with to make it happen. So that's kind of what this week looks like. Usually I have a day where I'm either doing podcasts or webinars or maybe out speaking. I spoke last week and the week before. And then on Mondays really are my days that I would call my business meeting days. So I meet with any of my partners, I meet with anyone and the heads of any departments. I do once a month a State of the Union address to the whole firm. It's kind of all the nitty gritty nuts and bolts preparation, you know, making sure that everybody's on the same page. So that's kind of what Mondays are. Tuesdays are typically a project day for me. And those project days would include editing some of my books, writing some of my books. I've got a really cool project I'm working on right now called Wealth Book, which is a multimedia platform with everything from videos to workbooks to, I don't know, it's going to be really cool. And so that's been a huge project. And so I'm actually looking at maybe adding more project time to my week, maybe doing even less of the kind of one-on-one phone calls with some influencers and relationships. And that's part of building this relationship model that maybe gives a little bit more automation that feels like personal touch. So yeah, that's kind of what my weeks look like overall. And then every now and again, I try to take a day off.
And so let's stick to this projects and sort of the idea of projects. This new project, Wealth Book, you called it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're working on it now on a project day. You're really sort of building it out. But there was a time where it was probably one of 10,000 ideas going through your inbox, through your head,
yeah,
through the team. So I would like to know sort of what was the process, Garrett, that you went through to decide that not just you, but also your team's time, energy, and resources is going to be devoted to a new project like Wealthbook?
Cool. So I have a particular system, and it just consists of four folders in my email. And it's basically doing now is the first folder, which means it has to live on my calendar within the next 2 weeks in time and space, meaning there's a beginning and end time. So it's not just a task that says, oh, I'll do this on Friday. It says, okay, from 9:05 to 9:35, I'm working on this specific thing to get this done. That's doing now. Not doing now is, hey, I am going to do this, but not in the next 2 weeks. So I'll just visit that inbox once a week and then see if I move it up to the doing now, or if I eliminate it, or if I move it to the third box, which is the parking lot. The parking lot is where most ideas exist, because in the moment, there's certain endorphins and excitement and adrenaline that makes me think like every idea is so freaking brilliant. But if I give it a little bit of space and I think about my team's bandwidth, and I'm really kind of focused on once a quarter coming up with five main objectives, so it needs to make sure it can live within those objectives so it doesn't destroy bandwidth or overwhelm us, then sometimes when I revisit it, it just gets eliminated or it gets given to someone else because it's a better fit for someone outside of my organization, or just sits there and I kind of revisit that once a month. Then the last folder is waiting for. Waiting for is I'm getting research, or I'm waiting for someone's response, or I'm waiting for something to be scheduled, and I can just revisit that every other day or every 3 days and kind of respond like, hey, where are we at on this? Just so that something doesn't slip through the cracks. And just by having that methodology of those four folders, that's been extraordinarily helpful, because I got to tell you, like, my tendency in the past was to take on too much, and then I'd have to get up super early in the morning, or I'd be working on the weekends, or my wife would be driven nuts because I'm in the middle of a project when I should be having family time. And so I kind of got to a point where Wealthbook is way behind schedule. But part of the reason is I decided just to hang out and drink Aperol spritzers and wine and swim in the pool and go to 4-hour meals when I was in Italy rather than working on a project, which is fine. Like, in the past, I would have felt like a failure. But now I'm like, that's a success that I was able to take a few months off, have my organization still run, let my team kind of grow while I was away, and really get time to spend with my family and kind of relax and rejuvenate. So I have quarters where I just nail my five objectives, and I have some quarters where I revisit the quarter and say, you know what, this is really going to be, we're going to shift this quarter because I'm taking 2 months off to Italy. That's a one-time thing. That's never happened before. But I am a little bit more flexible in life now than I used to be, because the core three things that we do at my firm, which is have me speak on stages, have monthly workshops that we host at our headquarters, and our one-on-one program, everything else outside of that is all bonus. It's all beneficial. But if we know those three things are working, everything else has a little bit of time flexibility. And I'm much more aware of bandwidth with my team now than I used to be 10 years ago, where every idea was urgent, every idea we should be moving forward with. And then all of a sudden, nothing's getting accomplished because it's just overwhelming.
So it's more to you, it's more of a what you have, like, sort of in the pipeline, have the bandwidth for you and your team, rather than is this something our best clients actually need?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, our one-on-one program has been around for a long time, and we just continually improve it. I just refilmed the entire kind of supplemental resources earlier in 2017 and made it more succinct. I thought that my delivery was better after going through some training. So, I mean, we're always improving that, but everything outside of that, typically, like, Wealthbook is just, it will help our existing one-on-one program, but it's not necessary to make it work. It's just an additional benefit that makes them feel great. So yeah, I want to get it done, but if it's not done, it's not detrimental to our firm. Whereas if the one-on-one side, we didn't have the right coaches, or we didn't have the right stages, or we weren't getting the right results, or there was an issue with our network, well, that's something that we would immediately want to put emphasis on and address, which we do. I mean, there's times where we're overwhelming our accounting side of things so much that it creates a problem with us being proactive or with us delivering at the level we want, so I have a chairman and I have executives that I basically really charge and put that on, because I don't want to get stuck in the minutiae of that, but I do want to see it addressed.
Fair enough. And so throughout this whole conversation, I mean, you sound very, like, systematic, like you have processes for everything. which make things sort of happen the way you've sort of laid out before you've started it, which to me seems counter or risk averse, right? So I want to just kind of touch on this because the other day I was reading an article you wrote on entrepreneur.com, and it was, you were saying that, I'm going to quote you, "In my experience, financial planners and entrepreneurs see the world from completely different perspectives, and they each think the other is a little bit crazy. For example, financial planners think entrepreneurs love risk." So this is something to me that I think the whole world outside of entrepreneurship thinks that entrepreneurs just absolutely are crazy gamblers and just love risk in every aspect of their life. But then talking to you for 20 minutes really seems counter to that. So can you kind of just expound on this for us and help people understand what you're thinking on this is?
Yeah, everybody has to stick with me for just a minute because this might sound just slightly airy-fairy for 30 seconds and then I'm going to drive it home. But my belief is everyone in this world has a sole purpose, S-O-U-L. It's our values, it's our passion, it's our abilities combined for the vision of like the best expression of who we are. And what happens is when someone else doesn't have the same sole purpose as you, so they don't have the same abilities, anything you do to them seems risky because it doesn't make sense in their world and from their viewpoint and perspective. So when you start something up, they're like, man, that is super risky. And look, there are those entrepreneurs out there that are risky, but that is kind of more the exception to the rule than the rule. But a lot of times the risky entrepreneurs that end up striking it big get written about in magazines and we see them on the news. The people that are more doing something that's really amazing, but it's really the best expression of who they are, and they're just resilient and they have a great vision, and yes, they hit bumps and they have temporary failures and setbacks, but they just keep moving forward. We don't hear about that as often. So a financial planner thinks, man, you're starting a business. Businesses, 90% of those fail in 5 years. That's super risky. You should just invest in the stock market. Well, the entrepreneur goes, I don't know the stock market. I've never been in the boardroom of these 500 companies, and I don't know what their vision is, and I'm not reading their financials, and I don't even know who the fund manager is, and I don't know why the market's going to go up or down. So that seems extraordinarily risky because it's so far removed from their own sole purpose, their own abilities and knowledge. And the average kind of person that's just working for a paycheck, they rely upon the stock market because they don't have other options. But the entrepreneur has the option to invest in their business, where if something isn't going right, they can course correct. They can learn from it. They can adapt. They can take that lesson and do something differently that might end up being a much bigger thing than they started with. And so what's nice is we get a lot bigger frequency to measure our own actions in our business. And in today's world, it doesn't require massive amounts of capital to be in business. We've got the best economy ever to be bootstrappers, where you can start a business with $5,000 or less simply because of two other things. Number one, our mental capital. If we have unique knowledge, skills, systems, tools, you know, wisdom, like value that we can think of that other people can't see. And number two, relationship capital, people, networks, organizations. I had a friend, Rich Christensen, on my radio show once, and he wrote the book Zigzag Principle and Bootstrap Business. He said, I start a business with less than $5,000 and sold it for multiple millions. I'm like, you're lying. I'm like, less than $5,000. Who was your first client? It was Sean Puff Diddy P. Daddy Combs. I'm like, you had relationship capital, man. And so it wasn't risky for him because he already had the connections. He already had unique knowledge. It's risky if you enter something you know nothing about and you just hope that it's going to work out and you don't have any cash flow model. You just hope to sell it one day. But most of entrepreneurship is about adding value and getting paid for that and seeing immediate results on that. So it's really risky to take our money outside of our knowledge and control and hand it off to a third party who then hands it off to other people that we've never met and that we don't even know where it's going and what's happening in the market. And that is really where there's this fundamental kind of like dilemma that you find most entrepreneurs face. They feel like they're not saving early enough and enough money and that their family and friends are telling them they're crazy and they better set money aside. But that capital might be much better served inside of their business where they actually have a relationship to the outcome. And even though I'm in the world of finance, it might sound like heresy to say that, but I know businesses that over 12 months can get in one division a 25% boost or a 50% boost. And the other thing I know is that 91% of people worth $5 million or more in this world own a business. So when we read financial books, every financial book negates the greatest asset that the business owner has, or the biggest investment, which is their business. The greatest asset we all have is ourselves. It's our mental and relationship capital. And sometimes the best investment we can make is in our own knowledge and an expansion of the value that we can create in the world, not in scrimping, budgeting, sacrificing, and putting it into places we have no clue about the outcome.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And so these ideas are further extended, I believe, in Killing Sacred Cows, your best-selling book.
Yeah, and I'd be happy to give that a download to everyone on me if you want. They can just grab that and we can either put it in the show notes or I can tell them the number
Very cool. They can text, well, you tell
me what you want to do.
Texting people only works within the States. Let's cover the world because we have people everywhere, including me up in Canada.
Yeah.
So we'll get a link from you and then we'll put it in the show notes for everyone because this is the extension of what he's saying. He goes into way more depth in the best-selling book, Killing Sacred Cows. So, Garrett, this has been absolutely excellent, fantastic conversation I've enjoyed. I do want to wrap up on one final question for you, if I could.
Great, let's do it.
It's this idea I'm working with, Garrett, calling the entrepreneurial gap. So interviewing 400 brilliant entrepreneurs from all walks of life, there seems to be this gap we live in as entrepreneurs that we always, no matter what we accomplish personally, we never seem to see ourselves as successful, meaning that we're always personally projecting our success into the future. So in 3 months when you stand on that stage, in 6 months when you hit that revenue metric, whatever it happens to be, you and I both know, Garrett, that seconds before you hit that goal, you're going to set 5 or 10 bigger ones into the future. So it's like walking towards the horizon. The further you walk, the further away it gets. So you've accomplished a ton in the time you've been in business and working with Wealth Factory. You got to just spend months relaxing in Italy. So things have been going well. But I would love it, rather than looking forward right now, Garrett, could you stop, turn around, and look behind you, the whole kind of crazy journey of entrepreneurship you've been through, and tell me how you feel about it up until today.
In my 20s, I could never be content and be happy with where I was because there was always someone that had more than me in my mind. In my 30s, I feel like I've really, through meditation and through pretty enlightened spouse, just gotten a perspective where every morning I do my 5-minute journal. So I'm doing my 3 things I'm grateful for. And I really feel like, man, the last 10 years, I've been in a place where I feel really grateful. I mean, I remember hitting New York Times and not even being excited about it because of a real estate deal that wasn't going good. Or hitting the Inc. 500 and not even telling my wife about it because our firm had our first down year the year after that. And now I was really frustrated. So I've been there where but I've kind of also accepted that business is a series of imperfection. Because even if we were to perfect it for that moment, we would create a new thing, like you said, on the horizon that would make it bigger, better, whatever. So I'm feeling really grateful just that now I take some time off. Now I'm doing more of the things that I really enjoy, that when I came back from Italy, that I was stoked to come back and wasn't resenting it and was excited to see everybody and just feel like, even though business doesn't mean that I do everything I want all the time, I'm doing most of what I want most of the time. And that's pretty damn cool considering my dad was a coal miner, my grandfathers were coal miners, and my great-grandfathers were coal miners. And I had a great-great-grandfather that was even a coal miner. So it's pretty easy to kind of appreciate that now that I at least have a better perspective. And I was just having breakfast with Dan Sullivan 2 days ago, and we were just talking about when I first met him and Babs, was strategic coach, were just urging me to take days off. But when people would say, what are your hobbies? You live in Utah, do you ski? No, I have a business. What do you do for fun? Business? Like, I just didn't have a life. And I eventually figured out how to have a business that wasn't my entire identity, although it's something I'm very proud of and love, but also have a life on the side as well by having rules and structure. Like, I kind of consider myself, John, an artist in reality. And so as much structure as we've talked about here today, might seem like that diminishes artistry, but it actually has given me more opportunity to express that artist in me with my content, with what I create, because of just having good people around me. And, you know, one thing I'm really careful about when I'm at a cocktail party, when I'm at a networking event, where I'm at a mastermind, is I'm in the world of finance, man. I know when people talk about their numbers, they only talk about their best months. They only talk about their gross revenue. And so I just don't give it that much credence because I've just had so many people that when they finally confide in me, their life's a freaking train wreck. And I don't even call Facebook Facebook. I call it Fakebook, because if people's lives were as badass as it says on Facebook, maybe I'd be jealous. But I just decided to get off it during my entire time in Italy, because even though I had a good life, I'd find myself jealous about people every now and again. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with me? I'm living in a freaking villa in Italy and I'm mad because someone's going to have more people at their event than I have at mine. I'm like, what kind of insanity is this? So it's a disease we all have to face and confront at some time. I'm not perfect with facing it. I'm just a whole hell of a lot better now.
I love it. I love it. I think I agree that if people's lives were as badass as they seemed on Facebook, that they wouldn't be spending so much time on Facebook. They'd be just enjoying what it is they're enjoying. So Garrett, we've got to talk about Wealth Factory in passing throughout the conversation, but could you now specifically tell the listener what Wealth Factory is and then where to find you guys online?
Yeah, wealthfactory.com. And it was really a concept that I created at 22 years old in its original form, which was I went into a New York family office financially. So it was around one table. I saw attorneys, accountants, investment advisors, risk management professionals, cash flow specialists, all working on behalf of a client in a coordinated fashion. And I was like, this is amazing. You had to be worth $50 million to be in there. And I was from a town that probably if we combined everybody's assets, it still wouldn't qualify. So I said, I want to do this for the entrepreneur, that all their assets are tied up in their business. They have good revenue, but I would call them the working wealthy. They couldn't stop working tomorrow, but they're pretty wealthy compared to the rest of the world. And they're usually the highest neglected, you know, where they're getting really bad financial advice versus these people that are at family offices. And I built a virtual family office, meaning I can work in all the US and Canada and provide them comprehensive financial services, not to manage their money, but to boost their cash flow so they could become economically independent, where they have enough investment and entrepreneurial income to cover their basic expenses, which means if they choose not to go to work on any given day, everything that's coming in covers their lifestyle, which means every active dollar they choose to earn, and they have more freedom to choose what they want to do in their life, can go towards building more assets and gives them a 10 times advantage to really build substantial wealth, make a much bigger impact, and enjoy life along the way. Because Benjamin Franklin said, wealth isn't the man that has it, but the man that lives it. And I really want to make sure that people enjoy life along the way rather than wait for 30 years for retirement. I think what we should do instead of retire is retire from the things that we hate, build a system that we would want to enjoy till the day that we die so that we have a purposeful, meaningful life rather than waiting for one day to finally take that trip or do those things that we always want to do. Hence the reason I went to Italy for 2 months right now, rather than waiting into the future. So Wealth Factory is that kind of comprehensive financial team to give people a checkup and a second opinion on everything they do, fix anything that's broken, and help them on the results and implementation to get economically independent in 3 to 7 years, depending on their financial situation, rather than 30 years and typically having a failed financial experiment that we call financial planning.
And then retire from the things you hate doing.
Yep.
I love it. I love it. All right. So if you go to hacktheentrepreneur.com when you're done walking, jogging, working out, whatever it is you're doing right now, I'll have links to wealthfactory.com. The Killing Sacred Cows book, we'll get a link to that, as well as that entrepreneur article I referenced earlier, and then everything else we talked about today. Garrett, once again, man, thanks so much for stopping by. Thanks for taking the time to share so openly with me. And please, man, just keep doing what you're doing because it's awesome and inspiring to watch.
I really enjoyed the interview, man. You ask wonderful questions and a couple unique ones, shared a few things that I would normally wouldn't share on a podcast, which I think makes for a great podcast. So they're not just hearing something I would say on a stage or on a video. So you definitely know how to pull that out of people. So great job.
DesignCrowd is a website that helps entrepreneurs and small businesses outsource or crowdsource custom graphic, logo, and web design from designers around the world. DesignCrowd has more than 550,000 designers from over 100 countries ready to help you with any creative projects you might have. Check out designcrowd.com/hack for a special VIP offer for Hack the Entrepreneur listeners. All right. So that was a lot of fun, and there was a lot that we covered in that conversation. Garrett said many, many, many things that made me stop, pause, and think, which I'm sure did to you too. But from all of the things he said, there was one. There was one that really, 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 really stood out to me. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I look at recruitment of a client as a lower priority than recruitment of a team member, because a team member is going to impact hundreds of clients, maybe thousands, where one client doesn't make or break us. And I feel like most businesses make the mistake of putting all their marketing efforts, all of their thought processes, all of their money towards acquiring clients rather than acquiring team members that will make for the best customer service and experience of the people that work with you that would create more longevity and more referability.
And that's the hack. Garrett. I like this a lot. So, I mean, we spend a lot of time in the business space, in the entrepreneurship space, talking about going against the herd, going against the grain, whatever you want to call it. But when you see the whole market going in one direction, going about it in another direction to stand out and to really be able to sort of gain the traction that you want to gain. I've interviewed nearly 400 people. I've never heard somebody talk about recruitment of team members in this way or with this level of importance. And yes, I'm not saying Garrett is the first person who puts importance on building up the proper team around you, but this is an interesting, just simple mindset shift of the way you think about it, which is putting more effort into recruiting the next team member, because that team member will in turn deal with hundreds of clients rather than the one client that you'll only possibly deal with once. And using this to ensure the best possible experience and growth for your company and for acquiring more clients in the future. To me, what this does is takes you out of the instant gratification, super short-term thinking of get the next client and just focusing on getting the next team member that is going to have impact exponentially and into the future for you. This has obviously worked really, really, really well for Garrett and Wealth Factory up to this point. And I think this is a great sort of mindset shift that you should change next time it comes and you feel like you're stretching and you need to grow, to push you, to take that time to really think about the impact that team member's going to have. Garrett, thank you so very, very much. All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did and as much as I enjoyed having Garrett on the show. As we talk about recruitment and sort of focusing on what that is that is going to drive your business to the next level and drive you to where you want to be, it's a time to think about that whole 80-20 rule and finding that 20%, or as I call it, defining that 20 that is going to impact you and your business in the greatest way. And I've created a course that you can go through in less than 2 hours, and it will absolutely do this for you and allow you to define your 20 and then be able to stay focused on it next week, starting on Sunday and moving your way through the week, through the month, and then through your quarter. It's impacted a lot of people and I've been getting great feedback from it. So I would love it if you checked it out. Hacktheentrepreneur.com/DYT. That's define your 20. Or you can just head straight to the website and you'll find places where you can grab it there. But it's fairly inexpensive course to buy and it's only going to take you 2 hours. So if you are looking to define your 20, now's the time. All right. It's been fun. I thank you so much, as always, for stopping by. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.